Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Joel Slater, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir.
These are the words from the Unitarian minister, Jack Mendelson. Here in this sanctuary of ancient dreams and wisdom and beauty, we come to grow, to be healed, to stretch mind and heart, to be challenged, renewed, to be helped in our own continuing struggles for meaning and for love, to help build a world with more justice and mercy in it, to be counted among the hopers and doers. In the face of cynicism, darkness, brutality around us and within, we seek to align ourselves with a living community that would affirm rather than despair, that would think and act rather than simply adjust and succumb. Here we invite the spirit of our own humanity and the healing powers under, around, through, and beyond it to give us the nerve and grace, the toughness and sensitivity to search out the truth that frees and the life that maketh all things new. Come, let us worship together.
Wisdom words to lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, taken from the Unitarian Universalist minister Galen Gingrich. This comes from a longer piece in which he's reflecting on a William Butler Yeats poem, in which Yeats refers to a ceremony of innocence. This is Gingrich's reflection on how what we do in church can be imagined as a ceremony of innocence. When times are bad, we may have little evidence that our faith is well-founded. Sometimes we do not have the courage to believe it ourselves. Then the ceremony of innocence becomes crucial. The role of any ceremony is to keep us from forgetting what must not be forgotten. It reminds us who we are, where we come from, and what we believe. In this case, despite ample evidence of life's brokenness, and despite a flood of feelings that we may be lost, we choose, if only for a moment, to live as though the world is whole and healthy. We embrace what we can find of truth, cherish what we can see of beauty, and respond with what we know of love. Simply put, the ceremony of innocence is what brings us to church. In a world where many things are falling apart, we are here to testify that some are not. We gather among friendly faces, listen to beautiful music, lift up acts of courage, and reflect on psalms of hope. We strengthen each other so that we can, in the words of the prophet Micah, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. Spirit of life and of love, Spirit of justice and mercy, we gather this morning on the weekend when our nation celebrates the birth of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. We gather to remember his leadership and the leadership of all the freedom fighters who worked side by side with him, most of whom we never knew their names. But we know stories and we have memories of their courage and their determination and their deep faith that the effort would be worth the struggle. We are the beneficiaries of that struggle. Spirit of peace, spirit of harmony, spirit of community, we pray this morning that we might know those qualities in our own lives, qualities of courage, determination, and faith, so that we may navigate the daily round, our own griefs, losses, struggles and triumphs, but also so that we may be part of the work of this world, continuing to bend the arc a little bit more toward justice. May it be so, and amen.
On the first day of school, I saw Peter Pummeler's name on the class list, and I knew I was in trouble because my name is Victor Parker. Parker Pummeler. We do everything in alphabetical order at my school, so this is a problem. For the last 2 years, every chance Peter gets, he pummels me. He hits me. He pokes me. He punches me. He bumps into me. But why? Well, 2 years ago, it was because I have two dads. And last year, it was because I'm friends with Glenn. Peter wanted so badly to be friends with Glenn, too. But Glenn didn't want to be friends with someone so mean, which only made Peter mad, and so he took it out on me. Behind me in the lunch line, behind me in the bathroom, behind me in class, this was going to be a long year. I resigned myself to be Peter's personal punching bag. Our teacher, Miss Nicely, walked to the front of the room and said that we were going to write the class rules together. One by one, we had to suggest a rule. Jamie thought we should raise our hand when we want to speak. Miss Nicely liked that one and wrote it on the board. Katie said that we should walk and not run, and also to follow directions. Jill suggested that we use inside voices and make good choices. Peter raised his hand. Miss Nicely said, "Yes, Peter, what is your idea?" Peter blurted out as loud as he could, "I think we should treat other kids the way we want to be treated." I couldn't believe my ears. Did Peter really say that? How could he say that when he pummeled me every chance he got? Miss Nicely then reminded us that if anyone broke the school's no bullying rule, they would be suspended. When the lunch bell rang, we all lined up. Parker Pummeler. My heart was thumping so fast and loud, I thought that everyone could hear it. And sure enough, Peter kicked me. Hard. Ouch! Miss Nicely saw it happen. "Peter, didn't we just talk about the no bullying rule? Come with me to the principal's office right now." So Miss Nicely told our principal, Mr. Regard, what she saw. Principal Regard seemed very disappointed. "Why would you get yourself in trouble on the first day of school? You know that the consequence of bullying is suspension." Peter Pummeler hung his head and responded in a quiet voice, "Sometimes I get so angry. I have a hard time making friends, and my parents are getting a divorce. We spent all summer trying to figure out when I would live with my mom and when I would live with my dad. We were so busy with all of that that I didn't have time to play with my friends." This wasn't the first time that Principal Regard had dealt with Peter and his bullying behavior. Peter was suspended last year for bullying another child. What should the principal do? We'll now hear the words of Counselor Justice and Counselor Mercy.
I am Counselor Justice, and I want to say that in this case, it is clear that Peter must be suspended. Just moments before Peter bullied another child, he had a conversation with his class about the rules of conduct. Peter suggested a rule that children should treat one another as they wish to be treated. His teacher concluded the discussion of the rules with a general reminder that bullying would not be tolerated and would result in suspension. Peter clearly understood both the limits and the consequences before he chose to kick another student. In addition, this is not Peter's first offense. In the previous school year, he was suspended for bullying another student. If Peter is not suspended this time, he may think that he will occasionally get away with bullying, which would surely make his behavior worse. Finally, Peter's bullying behavior was witnessed by many other students who had just been warned of the consequences for bullying. If Peter is not suspended, those other students may think that some people can get away with breaking the rules. That could embolden some students to engage in bullying and make other students fearful of reporting bullying for fear that the reporting would not result in consequences. Justice asks that Peter be suspended.
I am Counselor Mercy, and I admit that it's true that Peter knowingly broke the rules in front of other students. However, Peter's behavior is clearly a cry for help. We must remember that before Peter kicked another student, he positively contributed to the creation of the class rules. Peter suggested that students should treat one another as they wish to be treated. Peter offered that rule because that is how he wants to act. The fact that he did not act in that way suggests that he needs help, not punishment. This was made even clearer when Peter spoke with the principal. He told the principal that he sometimes gets angry because he has trouble making friends. Perhaps the school needs to be a better job encouraging relationships and helping all students feel connected, especially vulnerable students like Peter who have trouble making friends. Finally, it's clear to me that Peter is under a great deal of emotional strain as a result of his parents' divorce. Because he spent his summer dealing with the consequences of his divorce, he was not able to play with friends he does have, leaving him even more lonely. If he were suspended, it would surely not help Peter's situation and might even make matters worse by further upsetting and stressing Peter. Help, not punishment, is what Peter needs. Mercy asks that Peter not be suspended.
Community to serve as judges, to consider the story of Peter the Pummeler, to listen carefully to the words of Counselor Justice and Counselor Mercy, to decide what they think the principal should do, and to share their opinions with you. And our first speaker is Elena Klein.
I side with Counselor Mercy because I think Peter is having a very hard time and he needs help. I don't think he should be suspended. I think they should just sit him down and tell him that bullying is not the answer.
And Joey Murphy.
I agree with Justice that he should be suspended. He knowingly broke the rules that he made up himself, and while he is going through a rough time with home issues, that is no reason to harass other students. He broke the rules and should therefore deal with the repercussions.
William Lang.
I choose Counselor Mercy. I choose Mercy because Peter needs to find another way to work out his problems, and he needs help to do this. If he is just suspended, he may not get the help he needs and might go back to bullying other students. I think a better way to solve his problem would be to have an adult stay with him for some times, and if he's and try to give him some of his students to get friends with. And remind him not to bully.
Thank you. Allison Vanita.
I think he deserves mercy because he's had a hard life and it needs another chance. It probably won't help if he gets suspended, and maybe he could get like a prize every time he's good.
And Carol Gould.
I side with the Counselor of Mercy as well. I think someone professional, perhaps not quite a psychiatrist, but someone with whom he can relate, could speak with him and help him work out the conflicts in his life and the elements of self-control that he needs to build. After all, he's still a child, and I agree that justice would make him worse.
Thank you, judges.
So what should the principal do? You've heard the arguments of the counselors and the judgments of the people in our jury. So now it's your turn. Raise your hand if you think the principal should go with justice and suspend Peter.
Can we have
what?
Are we allowed to both?
If we had more time, we could have dialogue. So we're going to go on the spot here. If you think the principal should go with justice, raise your hand. Okay, not quite half. So if you think the principal should go with mercy, raise your hand and not suspend Peter. Okay, this is probably like two-thirds and a third. So we're divided because it's complicated. The truth is that both justice and mercy have good arguments. We set the story up, and we set the arguments up to seem like you could only side with one choice or the other, either justice or with mercy. And we did that on purpose because that's often how things work in our society. When people do something to break the rules, the outcome is often framed as an either-or choice. Either justice will be done and the person will be appropriately punished, or mercy will be offered and the person will be given another chance. Earlier in the service, you heard the words of the prophet Micah, who asks, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love mercy or kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" In this passage, Micah doesn't say, "Do justice or love kindness," but "Do justice and love kindness." So we wondered what the principal's decision about what to do with Peter would be if the principal had to figure out a way to choose both justice and mercy. As Joey pointed out, Peter broke the rules, and he did so with full knowledge of the consequences, so therefore he should face consequences. However, as our other jury members pointed out, Peter's clearly going through a hard time personally, and he needs some help and encouragement to be the kind of person that he wants to be. It's easy to imagine an outcome that would combine both appropriate punishment along with meaningful help and encouragement, that would combine both justice and mercy. If we had a choice that combined them, how many people would pick that choice? Just about everybody. This passage about doing justice and loving mercy from Micah was important to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday we're celebrating this weekend. In one of his sermons, he said that life is at its best is a creative synthesis of opposites in fruitful harmony. King believed that it's important to be tough-minded. He talked about that a lot, being tough-minded, seeing injustice clearly and judging it sharply. However, he also believed that it's important to be tender-hearted, and he talked about that a lot, too, to offer mercy and compassion to people who suffer and to love everybody, even, he said, our enemies. It's because of his commitment to both justice and mercy, because of his commitment to be both tough-minded and tender-hearted, that King pledged to fight injustice with nonviolence. King led the way against racism in his day, and he did it with love. He was ruthless in his critique of the injustices heaped upon people of color, but he was also unfailing in his pledge to fight without violence and in the spirit of love. In this way, he believed that all people would be saved from the plight of racism, and he was right. Thanks to Dr. King and the freedom fighters who worked with him, most people no longer believe that racism is acceptable. Of course, we still have room to grow, but we are free now to grow in ways that were only a dream when Dr. King was alive. Some people thought that Dr. King should stick to fighting for racial justice, but he believed that it was important to work against injustice wherever it might be found. That's why he spoke out against the war in Vietnam, and also why he declared a war on poverty in our own country. The war in Vietnam has long since ended, but all these years later, we're still struggling to figure out how to alleviate poverty in our country. Most people believe that we should show mercy, kindness, and compassion to people who are poor. We believe that at this church, and that's why we do things like collect money for Kent Social Services and for Christmas gifts for folks living in homeless shelters, and to collect money for emergency heating for people who don't have enough money to heat their houses in the wintertime. In this, we're just like almost every other church and synagogue and temple and mosque in this whole country. People everywhere believe that we should work together to extend mercy to those who suffer. But we must remember that the work of alleviating the worst of the ravages of poverty is the work of mercy when it's offered to individuals. Mercy is important, but we also need justice. Justice demands that we change the system that makes some people so poor that they can't afford to buy enough food or have a clean, decent place to live. Dr. King's idea was that there should be a minimum guaranteed income for everyone in our country so that even people who aren't able to work or who can't find a good paying job still have enough money to meet their basic needs. That was a radical idea then, and it's still a radical idea now. You might have some other ideas, and that's good, because this is going to require everybody's best thinking if we're ever going to figure this one out. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. Dr. King taught us about that last part, too. To walk humbly is to remember that no one person has all the answers and that not everything can be answered. To walk humbly is to remember that we did not create ourselves. Life was given to us as a gift. To walk humbly is to remember that we cannot sustain ourselves. We're dependent upon one another and upon this earth that we share. To walk humbly is to remember that we are interconnected, that we come from the same source, and that we'll return to it when life for us is done. To walk humbly is to use our power to create good as best we are able, while also remembering that our power is limited and we're in this together. For all of our days, may justice and mercy be our guides.
Closing reading is from Ellen Johnson Fay. Do justly this day and all days. Be of good will. Walk humbly before the mysteries of life and before that gulf which separates us from the ideals we profess. Live in peace and praise. Our day is just beginning. So be it.
I send you today with these words from Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy to a friend.
Let these words not just be echoes of our memories, but inspiration for our lives, that we may continue the legacy. Go in peace.